On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, On Point Podcast, a show brought to you by our good friends at Insurance Journal. And today we're talking with Brian Cohen with Altamont Capital. We'll talk more about Altamont Capital. Brian has a pretty rich history in the insurance industry, having run insurance carriers, Pacific Specialty, and also began in sales and marketing roles at the senior level at Farmers Insurance Group. So, Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Peter. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. And we first heard you speak at the Super Regional Conference for P&C Carriers, which was co-sponsored by Insurance Journal, last July up in Wisconsin. And it was a really nice panel of folks, including yourself, about what's going on with InsurTech. And I'm really glad that you spell InsurTech with an E and after Insure, because I'm on a mission to keep the E in InsurTech. Some people like to take the E out, and it just bothers me. I don't know why, Brian, but it just bothers me. So you said something there, which, and you know, maybe you could provide a little detail too around Altamont Capital, what you guys do there. But you said something that really stuck with me, and I thought it was kind of cool that you saw it this way, and that is that you said InsurTech for the traditional agent channel is – you think that we are actually in a golden age because the InsurTech and the agent support is really like the best thing for the local customer. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean by that? Because you were really supportive of the idea that the agent could continue to play a role in this new world.
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, not just a role. I think they'll play the leading role. Notwithstanding the fact everyone thinks it's all going to go direct, and frankly, it hasn't. And I think it's for two reasons, and it's the same two reasons since insurance first started back in the 1600s, and that is that insurance is complicated, and it's complicated to understand if you're a general consumer. And so people need someone that they can rely on and they can trust, and that trusted advisor role is there. Now, I would argue there are certain very commodity type products out there where people feel so comfortable they can buy it on their own. But I think when it comes to insurance, people don't feel that level of comfort because when you quote unquote buy insurance, you know, you're not just buying one thing. You're buying a contract that's fairly complicated and you want to make sure you have the proper coverage. So what excites me about InsurTech and the relevancy that it brings to the agent. And when I say agent, I'm really focusing on the independent broker, the independent agent that has multiple carrier relationships. And I'll explain that in a second. But what I see is bridging the challenge you have when you deal with an individual, and that is the need to be able to connect and the difficulty to connect today, individual to individual. But with InsurTech, what it does is it sort of bridges that gap. It makes it much, much easier for the consumer and the agent or the professional to interact in a fairly easy way and in an environment that allows the consumer to get what they want and get it at the right price. The reason why I distinguish between the independent broker or the independent agent as opposed to the captive agent is I think what has the internet sort of taught us, or what has Amazon.com taught all consumers? Check the price. Check the product. Make sure that I'm getting the most value. And really, the independent broker sits in the middle of that value chain because they have relationships with numerous carriers. So it's really their job to find the product that makes the most sense for their client. And now with various methods to communicate that in a very quick and seamless way, they can do it. And frankly, the experience is as good, if not better, than a consumer trying to do it on their own just by going to the web.
Mm-hmm. So you were talking as well, just to bring that point a little farther with playing that, sitting in the middle of that value chain. You talked about the possibility of, the reality of search and video and having the agent actually with Google and Bing be boom, right there, helping people.
Yeah, so, you know, it's again, it's funny. I was chief marketing officer at Farmers back in the early 2000s, and I never would have imagined how far we've come. And today, there are companies out there. There's one that I'm familiar with, but I'm sure there's others, called Engage.co, and they're based up in, I think, Seattle or Minnesota or somewhere like that. But here's the concept. Today, when you do search, in other words, when you want to go search something, whether you use Bing or Google, you know, you type in a search term and then you get a whole bunch of listings, then you got to click on and go to another site, and then hopefully that's the right site, and boom, 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 boom. Well, what's happening now is we have technology where if you type in, let's say, commercial insurance, the search engine knows where you're basically looking from, where you're located. And literally what will pop up immediately on that search bar are local agents that are available to talk to you immediately. So you just click on their persona and you're in instant contact. So it's not a chat room where you're typing back and forth. It's literally somebody, it's not a call center where you're talking to somebody that's 1,000 miles away. You're literally talking to a local agent that lives in your community, and you're doing it in real time without having to click two or three or four different sites or wait for a call back after you've sort of supplied information to a specific site. So I actually see the relationship between the individual broker or agent and the individual consumer getting stronger with technology, not deteriorating, as most commentators have said, especially, you know, at the advent of sort of the web and digital age.
Yeah, to that point, let's talk more about that, because I think you have a pretty strong philosophy about what insured tech really really means. I think you have said there's sort of this knee-jerk reaction out of fear or some kind of pressure where many traditional insurance companies and others, traditional insurance organizations, I should say, are making poor decisions out of that fear and under some kind of pressure. So you're in a unique role. We haven't yet talked about your firm, so we will. But what do you see as sort of the best practices of approaching this billions of capital that's coming in? People that are, you know, some of them aren't going to make it, others will, but they got tons of money. They have an idea that the consumer wants a better experience, but yet you have this traditional insurance industry that has a lot of experience with the product, but yet maybe not looking so snazzy, if you will. So what is a good approach here?
Yeah. So the way I look at the world of insurtech is there's really two groups in insurtech. They're what I call companies I call them the enablers. And what I mean by that is they're going to enable a traditional insurance organization, whether it's on the distribution end or it's on the carrier end or it's a TPA, they're going to enable with their technology this traditional organization to do things much more efficiently, much better, basically to just improve the way they're doing things and really leapfrog ahead of their competitors if they use this new technology. So that's those are enabler kinds of companies, and there's actually way more of the enablers than there are of the second set, which is the disruptors. But it's the disruptors that you hear about all the time because they're the ones that really live off of, I call it a model of always having to create the hype so that they get large valuations, which allows them to raise more money, which allows them to have even higher valuations. So you hear a lot of hype, for example, about, you know, a company, for example, like Lemonade. You know, my view on Lemonade is you can't make lemons out of lemonade. I wish them all the best. But you hear a lot of hype about them, but they're a disruptor. Mm-hmm. They're trying to disrupt the whole industry. What I focus on is the enablers, and the approach I like to take is an insurance organization, they know their business better than anyone else. And they know what they do well, and they know what their unique value proposition is, but they also know what they could do better. And the approach that I like to use is very straightforward, and that is, it's really fundamentally two questions. The first question is, get a group of folks to sit down and say, you know what, if we didn't have to worry about any legacy issues whatsoever, if we could start today with a clean slate, how would we organize the way we would do things? And then just draw it up. And then look at where you want to be if you had a clean slate and compare where you are and then the path from where you are to where you want to be is where InsurTech fits in. Figure out what kinds of enabler types of InsurTech companies, whether it's a software company or a data analytics company or an AI company, which is really like a machine learning kind of company, figure out where they fit in getting you from where you are to where you want to be. And that to me is a critical approach, because what it means is you, the organization, are taking control of the InsurTech decisions you'll make. And what I see happening is there's so much talk and buzz about InsurTech that every board meeting of every insurance organization, there is carved out some discussion as to what are we doing and are we doing it fast enough? And most of the time the answer is no, in terms of we're not doing it fast enough, and so we better figure out what to do to move faster. And so people are looking to buy things without stepping back and asking how they want to use and how those things fit into where they as an organization want to be. At the end of the day, InsurTech, enabler companies, InsurTech is just about one thing, and that is their tools to make your business better. And I think if executives and people in management and even people that are working in the day-to-day whose advice is being asked about what they need, if they would just take a deep breath, step back, and say, hey, what can we do to make our organization better? The answers as to what's available out there for them become a lot easier to make. And we make much better decisions when we're not scared than we do when we are.
Mm-hmm. So true. You also mentioned at that conference, Brian, I thought this was an interesting point. There's, last I checked, there's about 2,200 carriers, P&C carriers, that are rated by, that are rated by AM Best or Demotech or whoever. And so there's thousands of them, and there many of them are regional, super regional even, but many of them are smaller regional. And you made the point that there's no reason for them to sit around just because they're not Hartford or Travelers with big tech budgets, because the price of tech has dropped dramatically, and you don't have to build it yourself anymore.
Yeah, you know, that's so true, and thank you for reminding me about that, because I think from you know, where we are today versus decisions that you on tech that you were thinking of making even just 5 or 10 years ago, the cost of technology is so inexpensive today because of just advancements in what technology can do and in the power of effectively just the individual computer on your desk, that the products also that are out there are much more tried and tested. And so the old world way of doing things was you needed to call in a company that was going to build a proprietary type of system for you or solution for you, and that was extremely expensive. So most you know, smaller size carriers would say, you know what, we'll continue to do it the way we're doing because, you know, we just can't afford it. The exciting thing today is they smaller size organizations can have technology power at their fingertips as potent as what their big, huge competitors have as well. And that to me is the game changer, because the smaller carrier always sort of had to wait until the technology got so inexpensive because it was used by so many people that they could then gravitate to it. But today, these smaller carriers can actually go out and partner with different technology companies and actually leapfrog ahead of their much larger competition. And that, to me, is the game changer that's going on in the insurance industry that people haven't yet recognized.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So take it a step further. If you're an independent agent or broker, what should your strategy be here? Is it more sort of wait and see, or are there things that they can do to be involved with these enablers?
Well, you know, if you're an independent broker, I think the independent brokers, actually, I think the agents, agents that are out there, I think they're a step ahead of the carrier community, to be perfectly honest. And that's because a lot of the technology solutions that first came out in InsurTech were targeted the independent brokers and even some of the captives. And so I think that the independent brokers are a step ahead. They already are using technology in ways that their carrier colleagues still are trying to get to. And so what do I mean by that? What I mean is most, if you visit most independent broker offices today, they're running their platform all in the cloud. They're effectively fully digital, even though it might not, you know, they might not think that they're that advanced. But if you look at the systems that they're using, they're fully digital systems. They're in the cloud. They have mobile capabilities. They can communicate and do things for and with their clients that they otherwise couldn't do before. So I think that what's going to happen is the independent broker and agent is going to continue to push the carrier side of the equation to improve and to get better from a technology standpoint. And the way they do that is, I believe, because you're already seeing it today, carriers that aren't able to provide the level of agent support that the agents are now demanding from a technology perspective, those agents are deciding not to do business with them. And so that's why I think this whole InsurTech environment has picked up steam. It sort of started with the agent. The agent is now pressuring the carrier. The carrier knows that they have to start to upgrade and get better at what they're doing and really find ways to integrate what they're doing from a technology perspective. And so you create this environment of constant improvement. And I think we're going to see iterations of this continue, which is why I think this is a golden age, because ultimately what that means is brokers are going to get better at serving their customers. Carriers are going to get better at defining risk, at underwriting risk, at handling claims, at managing their portfolio. And so the whole industry is going to become more efficient. It's going to become able to deliver the value that they deliver in better ways. And that is only ultimately going to inure to the benefit of the whole industry, including the policyholders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. And so you talked about the picking up steam. And I think it started, I don't know, 2014, maybe 15, certainly. It's certainly big time in 16 and 17 in terms of investment by all kinds of forces into the insurance industry. It's almost like we're the last industry that people said, oh, this is an industry that's, 6 or 7 or 8% of the gross national product, whatever it is. It's a humongous industry. Hey, what about these guys? And all of a sudden, boom, they're here. And you guys are playing a role. Can you talk a little bit about what you see going on, how it's evolving in terms of the investment level, and how it might change going into 2018?
Yeah, sure. So, we are, Altamont Capital is a private equity firm, so that's a little different from a venture capital firm. We don't invest in startups. We invest in existing businesses that are profitable and they're looking for growth capital. In other words, they're looking for capital to allow them to grow faster than they could if they just use their organic profits to grow. And so we like to partner with existing management teams and companies that want to grow at a faster rate and are looking for capital and some expertise as well. And so that's what we do. The fun thing for me is Altamont is based up in Palo Alto, and so we're really at the epicenter of what's happening from a technology perspective, even though most of our investments are in very traditional companies. And what I see is the first wave of insurtech companies starting to get to the point where there's going to be a transaction. They're either going to be taken public or they're going to be sold. And these first wave of these newer insurtech companies, we're going to get a sense, I think, in 2018 of what kind of values you're seeing on an exit. And that's either going to get people a lot more excited to put even more money in because the exit multiples will be very high, or if the exit multiples aren't where people thought they would be, that might be, give people pause as to whether or not they should continue to focus as much as they are in insurtech. Now, my bet is that those exit multiples are going to be very high, and again, it's only going to fuel even more investment and even more focus by, very, very bright and capable and talented people to really dive into the insurance world and find out where insurtech can really, add value. So I'm fairly bullish on 18, and even though, as you said, insurtech's been around for a few years, I think the best is yet to come.
Okay. What you didn't talk, you haven't talked too much yet about the disruptors. I know you said enablers outnumber the disruptors, but there are some examples out there of at least the experimentation in this area. Do you think these they will have higher, or do you think they'll have lower exit multiple, these kinds of companies?
Yeah, so let me, let me tell you about disruptors. It only takes one to turn an industry upside down, and you only have to look at Uber and what it did to the taxi industry to understand that. So there might be less disruptors, and there are less disruptors because a disruptor is taking a bigger risk. They're really trying to come into the industry and, completely turn things upside down, to their benefit, obviously. What I see from the disruptor perspective, and where I like to sort of, well, when I'm talking to to colleagues of mine in the insurance industry, and I include myself, what I say that a disruptor brings that it's difficult for somebody in the industry to do is they have a way of looking at what we do in a completely different way, from a completely different perspective. And when you do that, you see things that somebody that's spent a lot of time in the industry just can't. And so, at the conference, I talked about this one company that I think is just a great example of where I see disruptors having a really big role in the insurance industry. And that is this little company in Berkeley, California called Jumpstart Recovery. You probably haven't heard about it, and they're very small right now. But the thing about it, and the thing that I love about its story is it's a company that effectively offers a small amount of money if there's an earthquake and your home happens to be in the area where the earthquake occurred. So it's effectively a form of, I'll call it, low value earthquake insurance. But it was started by a geologist. So it wasn't started by someone in the insurance business. In fact, the initial group of people that got involved, none of them had insurance experience. But what they saw was something that we in the insurance industry didn't see. And that is, in many states, California is the obvious one, In California, earthquake insurance for a homeowner is very expensive. And we haven't had a real major earthquake since the Northridge quake back in 1994. And so a lot of people, when they look at the cost, they say, you know, we haven't had one in a while. I really can't afford it, so I'm not going to buy it. And so what we have is we have a lot of carriers in California that offer earthquake insurance, but we have very few people that buy earthquake insurance. So this little company came up with a completely different idea. What they said was, you know, a lot of people after an earthquake, their house isn't destroyed, but there's damage and, you know, it might be a few thousand dollars. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to say, give us $20 a month. And then if there's an earthquake, and it's in your zip code and it hits a certain Richter scale, then we'll give you a benefit of $10,000. We're not going to send a claims adjuster. We're going to just take the $20 a month right out of your account. You're going to give us authorization to do that. There's effectively no underwriting. They don't have to underwrite individual risks. So what they did is they took the whole value chain of insurance and they consolidated it down to basically, you give me $20 a month, and if there's a quake in your area, we're going to give you $10,000. And it's very simple for the consumer to understand. It's very affordable. And I think that's an area where it's a great example of where we have carriers that have earthquake insurance policies out there with, you know, that cost a lot of money, and they miss this smaller area, which is where most folks have issues, and frankly, where most folks can easily afford it. So that to me is that's an example I love to use because it's not overhyped. It's a very focused area. But what I love, again, is started by a bunch of geologists.
Yeah. And so maybe I could rephrase my question a little bit differently, because I think there are lemonade would be an example of a disruptor, right? They get a lot of hype and
absolutely
not interested in enabling really anything, although that could always change in the future right now. So do you feel bullish about the disruptors as well coming out with these high exit multiples? Or is that too general a question? Because I'm trying to figure out, there are more enablers than disruptors, but and there's going to be winners and losers in each, I would think you would say. But what do you feel, what do you think is going to happen? Or maybe you just don't know yet, which is fine.
So here's what I would tell you. The enablers will not get the big headlines on the front page of the Wall Street Journal when they exit.
Yeah.
Their folks will make a lot of money, right? I mean, there's an enabler company out there called Vertafore, and I think it's owned now by some huge private equity firm. I can't remember the specific one.
Applied Systems, the other one is owned by Bain.
Yeah, there you go. Bain owns Applied, exactly. But these are huge private equity firms. And by the way, you know, these are multi-billion dollar companies, but, you know, you don't really hear much about them. And that's an example of an enabler, right? But the disruptors are the ones that get the headlines because they do more than just get the big exit dollars. They force everyone else in the industry to radically change or effectively to disappear. And do I see companies out there that are trying to do that? Absolutely. But do I see any that are getting the traction that, let's say, an Uber did early on or some of the other major disruptive kinds of companies that we're all familiar with? Not yet. It doesn't mean it won't happen, but I don't see it yet. And I think the difference is there's still in the insurance value chain, in the insurance experience, there's still a lot of friction before a transaction occurs, and sort of solving for that friction, I think, is proving a little more challenging for some of the disruptors than they first perceived. What I do want to say, though, is that doesn't mean that there's somebody out there in a garage coming up with an idea that could really, you know, transform our industry, because I do believe we are an industry that is very much in need of transformation, and one that historically has sort of waited until they, you know, changed the way they did things. And so I don't know if I don't see any companies on the horizon that I think in the next 1 to 2 years are going to have a huge exit. But that doesn't mean, one, that they won't be very successful, or two, that there might not be somebody else that comes up and, again, gets a lot of, you know, speed and buy-in, and what they're doing really sort of revolutionizes the industry. Did I answer your question, Peter?
You answered the question. There's so many ways to slice this. I have many more questions for you, but I think we're out of time. If you don't mind, Brian, talk some more about 2018, because this is just a fascinating area, and I'm like you. I'm kind of excited. I'm in a different side of the business than you are, but I'm kind of excited for the industry. I think we haven't even touched on the generation of people coming into the industry now, the millennials, the oldest of whom is 35 or 6 now. And these people, I think, are going to look at insurance in a whole different way, because it's not going to be your father's insurance company anymore. It's going to be a place where it's going to be kind of cool to work, because, you know, think about AI and analytics and big data and all these things. They apply, drones, they apply so well to the industry, don't they? And I'm sure you're dealing with this every day, so I'm excited for these guys. I just think they've got to, if they're not the ones to make the change, they should hire people who can bring about this change. So I'm right with you. Not really a question, maybe more of a soliloquy.
Yeah, so. No, I totally agree with you, Peter. You know, at the end of the day, everyone is totally enraptured with data analytics, and when you think about it, what's an insurance company? They're a data analytics company.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to be at the center of data analytics, in a lot of respects, you want to be at an insurance carrier. So I totally agree with you. That again, you know, we talked about it, I think the first question about the golden age. It's not just the golden age for brokers and, you know, other folks. It's a golden age for people that want to get into the business at the carrier level, mm-hmm. because of all the things that, you know, technology is going to enable a carrier to do. And these young kids are the ones mm-hmm. that can do it, because they actually understand it a heck of a lot better than an old timer like myself.
Well said, Brian. For folks that want to reach you, it's B Cohen, BCOHEN, at altamontcapital.com. You can also go to that website. It's altamontcapital, altamontcapital.com. And that one doesn't have an E after Altamont, which kind of threw me. But because I'm so used to that spelling, I think it's Italian for mountain or something. But but I do like the E in InsurTech, to put a bow on that. Well, Brian, thank you again for your time. I enjoyed meeting you at the conference, and we'll stay in touch, and we'll do another recording sometime.
Hey, Peter, thank you. This was a real treat for me, too.